Hi everyone, and thank you very much for joining us in another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Mira, and I will be your host for today's show. With me today is a very special guest. It is Konstantinos Pandidos. How are you today?
I'm fine.
I'm fine, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you here on the podcast, Konstantinos. And of course, for those listening, Konstantinos is the author of Living Brands, and a book that we're very excited about here at LID. And he's come to join us all the way from Greece today. And he's got us in the weather that's not too bad. It's not raining all that much today in London. But again, thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast, Konstantinos.
Thank you.
And can't wait to get into today's discussion about living brands, how biology and neuroscience shape consumer behavior and brand desirability. Now, before we get into the meat of the discussion, I really want to ask you, what actually inspired you to become an author and start writing?
Well, as many other marketers, I used to believe that psychology is the driving force behind the marketing, advertising, and the consumer research. I was wrong, actually. The roots of human behavior lie in biology, not in psychology. Concepts that touch everyone are inherent brain concepts. And following the pathways of concepts allow us to generate seminal ideas for brand positioning, communication, and creative development. So successful brands follow the path of least resistance to our brain. And this is the reason I became an author, to help marketers and communication people build brands that activate the very forces of life.
Right, and that's very fascinating, because a lot of the ideas when it comes to branding and consumer behavior, actually, as you say, people think, it has a lot to do with psychology, but actually there's the biology part there that's really, really important. And of course, as a postgraduate university lecturer, as yourself, you've delved very deeply into the biology factor of this and encompasses areas such as strategic marketing and consumer behavior. And now let's talk about the book, because there's so many exciting things I want to get into about it. And the first is, now, one of the central themes of your writing is how successful brands are actually alive. They're living things. They're not just static. They're not an inanimate object. Can you tell us what you mean by this concept?
So living brands incorporate the very forces of human life. They're based on the fundamentals of biology and neurobiology and the rich hierarchy of concepts that infuse into our everyday life. As abundant and varied as our emotions are, they all stem from 12 fundamental human motives, which are evolutionarily preserved dispositions that have helped us survive and thrive. Nature made their satisfaction intrinsically pleasurable. Brands become alive by activating the right motive at the right level using the right mental triggers. In this way, they become personal at scale. They are alive because they're constantly recreated in each person's mind, engraving their own deep and ineradicable paths on our brain.
And that's very interesting, because I want to talk a bit about biology and neuroscience. Now, there's something very interesting that you said there, and that's triggering certain pathways in the way that we think, whether it's through advertising or the consumer attachment that we get to these brands. What role does biology and neuroscience play in this whole process exactly?
We know now that the roots of human behavior are based on efficient solutions to primal survival problems developed during the course of our evolution. Establishing systems in our brain and body, they became our organizing principles. Our feelings reflect our neural experience. Behavior is a code that reflects our brain structure. Our fundamental human motives are autotelic, intrinsically pleasurable, as we said. Their pursuit is impulsive, founding their strategies on the forces that have helped us survive and thrive. Brands engrave their own deep, ineradicable pathways on our brain. Their manifestations become organic ideas with instant appeal. This is the way brands incorporate, embed, let's say, in a way, our fundamental human motives. First of all, they have to identify what they are, what they stand for, and then communicate this consistently to their audiences.
Yeah, and that is a difficult process, being able to do it consistently, not just doing it once or doing it twice, which many people would say, well, it was lucky, you know, or you were at the right place at the right time. But I've personally found with a lot of the very popular brands out there, they know what they're doing. They can hit that sweet spot all the time. And in a way, I would imagine there's a lot of research, there's a lot of going back and forth, going into that process. And that's what makes it fascinating. And it leads me on to my next question, Constantinos, and that's, what techniques do coming up brands that are trying to establish themselves now, what can they do in terms of engaging their consumers and actually creating this long-term sustainable relationship? How do they compete with the big guys out there?
It's a good question. To engage consumers at a profound level, brands must first of all understand what they are. They have to be true to themselves. They need to understand what they stand for and give people the chance to liberate some human, pan-human, pan-cultural motive. Our research indicates that all great brands coherently embody one or more of our fundamental human motives. Apart from this internal study, to capture the essence of the brand itself in the consumer minds, marketeers can use category landscaping techniques like to gauge the dominant motives that drive the sales and profit in the category, as well as unsatisfied motives that provide opportunities for new brands, meaning saturated territories that they need to avoid, and competitors infringing into their own territory. To create a long-term sustainable position and relationship with the consumers, brands should graft the essence of the category, what consumers have always wanted from the category, from with their own essence, their narratives, in unexpected and profound ways.
Now, you said something there very interesting, and before we move on, I kind of want to elaborate on that. And you mentioned competitors, and that's something that I think every brand, every company has to eventually clash with. There are other companies out there doing similar things or providing a service which inevitably clashes with your own. Now, they say that being able to copy something is a very sincere form of flattery. In your personal and, of course, professional opinion, would you say for up-and-coming brands, should they try and mimic what big brands out there are doing? Should they try and do their own thing, perhaps? Or should they maybe mix the two and come up with their own personalized solution?
I think they have to come up with their own personalized solutions. Mimicking is not a good thing. Not having prototypes, for instance, help us express our own unique answer. So we have to identify what is our own unique solution we give to the market, what is our role in the category, and try to impress consumers through these authentic ways. So if we mimic something, we are not authentic, which means our answer to the category and the consumer needs are not authentic, and this is not sustainable. We can be lucky enough, as you said before, in the short term, but we need, in order to be sustainable, to be authentic and provide what consumers actually want, what our mind and brain longs for.
Right. Always be on the lookout for what your customers are telling you. That's often a very important part of it. Feedback, being able to actually incorporate whether it is a survey or perhaps something to do in technology that you're currently implementing. But as we've now established a good representation of what a living brand might be and how we can get to the stage of a living brand, can you perhaps give us a case study from your work of a current brand that's empowered by this method now and how they achieved it?
Yeah, we can mention some important brand that we have not worked with. It's not our customer, but it's a very important brand and everyone knows. And also we can very characteristically analyze, which is Apple, the technology company. Apple is a living brand because it incorporates the eternal life-affirming strategy of creation and destruction. These two things go together in our mind. We cannot create unless we destroy things. And that's why the slogan of Apple is think different. to create, we must destroy. Apple was influenced by the DNA of Steve Jobs himself. So Apple attacked originally the corporate leader that was IBM. IBM stood for order and control, and their slogan was think. That's why Apple comes up as a defiant company. So the interesting thing is that Apple is now the status quo.
Right, right. As before being the underdog, you rise up and then you became the very thing that you were once standing up against, which is a very interesting concept.
Exactly, but it should have some problem to sustain its defying creative positioning. But Apple serially destroys its previous self. For instance, its iPhone is compared to the old one, and Apple is a living brand because it continually destroys and recreates itself, representing a profound and eternally primary, let's say, life process. The moment Apple betrays this DNA, its decline will start.
And that's very interesting because, you know, from my personal experience, I've always been kind of honest about it. I'm not an Apple person. I've always been a PC person. I have an amazing fascination with computers and building them. And at the same time, I've never really been into it. But one thing that I've really liked about Apple is, as you say, their ability to simply say, you know what, we're going to change something, or we're going to do something different. And a good example of this was, and many of our listeners, you will remember this too, is that they changed their audio jacks on all of their devices. And what that did is it made a lot of previous attachments and headphones, etc., and chargers actually incompatible with the new models. So you had to go and you had to purchase the new one. And that would seem to be a very destructive thing for a lot of companies and a lot of people, and there would be a lot of outrage. But actually, they managed to, in a way, innovate with that and at the same time keep customer loyalty, which I've never seen many brands be able to do something drastic in that way. But at the same time, it's acceptable and it's okay because it's new and it's tearing something down simply to build it back up. And I don't think many brands do that. As you say, you know, when it came to IBM and all of these very strong IT brands from the 90s, and the reason a lot of them didn't manage to make it through the dot-com boom, in my opinion, and what one of the reasons was, is that they didn't think anything would change. They didn't think that they would have to tear something down, make something new, and eventually it caught up to them. I mean, do you perhaps see this happening now?
Yeah. The reason that this innovation came from Apple was because it came naturally through its character. So people accepted this change. If the change was coming from IBM, probably it will not be the same thing. People will not accept it so easily because, as you said, IBM stands for order, control. It's the standard in the industry. So the standard normally does not change. It provides security to our mind through stability. But for Apple, it's a different thing. Apple is there to revolutionize the market. So introduce new elements into the industry. So from Apple, it is accepted, not only accepted, but also is perceived as a great innovation. It's a great innovation, of course, along with some other elements that Apple improved in the innovation you mentioned. For instance, you can put the plug in both directions, etc.
Yes.
While in other appliances, you have to see and be very careful where to place the plug, etc. So it's always coming back to the same question, the DNA of the brand, the essence of the brand. So competition is not among products. Competition comes through meaning. We have a competition of nuance, let's say, meaning, what we try to satisfy through consuming products rather than products itself. So the best companies go beyond the competition of products because there is always a new product with improved features or a lower price product, and we have always an argument against another argument, but you cannot argue against meaning because it comes out of the heart of the brand, of the soul of the brand, and it is authentic. So people satisfy their needs through consuming or even thinking of these brands.
It's a way of life in a way. And actually, as we've talked about this, I now have so many examples of this happening. Another really big one was, I would say, Nokia within the late 90s, you know, early 2000s. We had a recent podcast when we were discussing this exact brand and their very quick rise to fame, especially within corporate phone supply technology, you know, very steady, very good, even when it came to mobile devices. But they didn't embrace the chaos, I would say, to their order, and they would, you know, continue doing what they knew how to do, and they were doing it extremely well. But when the sort of, I would say, the BlackBerry revolution and the smartphone revolution came in, well, they weren't prepared for it. They didn't know how to actually exact their living brand message to consumers, and they ended up suffering in that area because of it. And of course, they've learned that now, and they've bounced back. But before we move on, one last question on this topic I really want to ask you is, do you think that this is a phenomenon that is very prevalent within the tech industry in specific, or is it happening across the board? Because I think of a lot of these examples in tech industries, and in a way that seems natural. I mean, it's technology, it's changing. But can it happen in other industries with other types of brands?
Yeah, it happens to any types of brands, I think. But the phenomenon is more obvious in industries like fashion and technology because of change. So technology is about disruption, actually introducing new things every time that replace the older things. So technology is also a kind of egalitarian element in society because it gives power to more people. This is what Nokia stands for, connecting people, and it is actually at the heart of communication, mobile phones, etc. But as many companies, when we are very successful, we tend to forget the reasons of our success. And this is a mistake because people always trust companies for what they stand for and not for the perfect products they produce. Of course, quality is given, especially for global companies like that. But it's not enough. We have to sell meaning. We have to attach meaning to products because people do not just, as we said, consume products. They satisfy slices of life. Every day we consume our own guiding principles we discussed before.
Yes, and now moving on, I think there is one final factor in this calculation when it comes to what a living brand is, and that's the external sources. And they can be anything from current culture events, political events, advances in technology, geopolitical, whatever it may be. There's so many different external factors that can come in and they can have an impact. Now, how can brands deal with the unpredictable, sometimes, consumer behavior coming off from these external sources? And how can they continue keeping up their meaning and the message of their products as well?
We have a lot of situations where we have external facts, abrupt facts that change consumer behavior. But this is because we don't focus on deep human insight, because really the deep human motives do not change. As neurobiologists say, these external facts are just motivating, activate internal systems in our brains. So external events only activate intrinsic affective potentials of our nervous system. By choosing to imprint our brands onto the inherent concepts of brain, we choose to operate on the most stable, efficient and sustainable platform of doing business. We focus on elements, pan-human, pan-cultural elements that do not change. Only the manifestations of these motives change from culture to culture or from time to time, but not really their essence.
Right, that's very fascinating insight there. And Konstantinos, there is one last question I want to ask you, and that's the one I ask anyone that comes on the podcast, and it's, I guess, in a way not related to what we're talking about, but what are you currently reading?
I'm reading a book called Ask, which is about an online method to discover what clients want. Actually, this book helps us understand that we can bring clients inside the organization. So we pre-sell in a way our products to clients because the clients have participated in their creation. They feel in a way obliged to buy it in any way, even if they don't buy. They give us a very nice information deep inside in order to launch new products or improve the existing ones.
Great, fascinating stuff. And of course, for our listeners, in the description below, we'll put in a link to that book. So if that sounds interesting to you, you can go and find out more. And if you have been listening to this episode, I would imagine it would. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Miro.
And of course, for our listeners, again, if you enjoyed our conversation, in the description below, there will be links where you can find out more about the book Living Brands and, of course, Brand Aviators and Konstantinos as well, their work, what they're up to and how you can get in touch with them. Once again, I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you tuning in, and you can check us out on our social media channels at Lid Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next week.